Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And the host and founder of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick off the program now with Carol Marks in conversation with Amanda Eniety. She's a CNN contributor and stress and technology correspondent for PBS Media Shift. She's going to tell Carol about her new book titled Seeking Serenity, The 10 New Rules for Health and Happiness in the Age of Anxiety, published by NAL.
So looking back, because I believe nothing happens by chance, after you survived cancer and were asking the questions, why me, that everyone asks, first when they get ill, it wasn't by chance then that CNN, I believe, asked you to write a column calling Seeking Serenity. Do you agree with my synopsis?
I think that is so true and so perceptive, because it's Steve Jobs once said that you can't quite tell when you're in it. But you can't tell what's happening. You can't put together the pieces while you're going through it. But sometimes in retrospect, you're really able to piece it together, and it all makes a certain kind of sense. And I think you're right. The fact that I stumbled into a job writing about all the different pieces of stress over the course of several years, and then eventually went on to take those pieces and synthesize them into a book, I learned more, and it was more of a gift to me than I could have ever imagined. So absolutely right.
And we're so glad you're sharing that information with us. Now, you started out your investigation about stress with the belief that most of us have, that it's really damaging. But you learned there are different types of stress, and some stress can be good if it's in short bursts. So can you give us an example of good stress? Because I never thought of stress as being good.
Isn't that interesting? And about several weeks ago, I spoke to a group of 500 school children, elementary school children. And I asked these children, do you think stress is bad? And almost 100% of them said, bad. They yelled out bad. And I said, well, do you think stress can be good? And nobody raised their hand. Now, these are children as little as kindergarten, 6 years old, five, 6 years old. And so our mythology about stress has even spread down to the youngest among us. And so here we are on any given day, when we walk around, we hear people very casually in conversation, we hear ourselves talking about how stressed we are. And it's almost always a negative thing, right? We don't say, oh, I'm so stressed, but it's great. And what we have to do really is stop painting all of these different kinds of stressors with the same toxic brush, because in fact, stress falls across a spectrum. There is the toxic stress, which is very specific. It's chronic. It goes on for a long time. There are no breaks or buffers. There are no protective factors. You don't know what to do about your situation. So you're kind of going through this problem, this issue that's overwhelming you for a long period of time. And then at the other side of the spectrum, you have acute short bursts of stress, which can actually be very, very healthy for you. So exercise is a short burst of stress, is a stressor. Things that you wouldn't expect, the excitement of going on a trip is a kind of a stressor. Having to learn, you experience short bursts of stress before you go in to give a talk or anything, to lean in for a kiss for the first time. These are all acute bursts of stressors, and they're very good for you. They can be very good for you, research has shown. And then in between the acute, the good stress, and the chronic, the bad stress, you have this whole spectrum of tolerable stress, which if we can think about our stories of that which does not kill you, make you stronger. There are the experiences that we have, the discomforts that we experience, that which then go on to change the course of our lives, often for the better. They help us learn, they help us grow, they help us synthesize experiences, gain more empathy. And so you have the spectrum of stress, which includes the acute, the good stress, the chronic, the bad stress, and then the tolerable stress. And there are very particular ways of stressing well, of taking chronic stress and doing your best to turn it into tolerable stress. And you do that by introducing breaks and buffers into your life.
You have some really interesting ones in your book, you know, ways to turn this toxic, battering stress into tolerable stress. And, I liked the fact that you emphasized doing something as simple as deep breathing. You mentioned exercise, but even taking a bath or shower, something to break the whole sequence up.
Absolutely. So, and that's how you want your days to look. You want your days to not look like peaks, going from peaks to peaks to peaks, so high stress to high stress to high stress. You want it to look like peaks and valleys throughout your day. So you want to, if you experience something, you know, you're out in traffic and your heart's beating fast and you're very frustrated with some drivers, you can then take a moment. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to pay for anything. You can take a moment and do some deep breathing or go for a walk around the block or enjoy a hot cup of tea and have a nice conversation. All of these things, there's so many ways of creating these low to no stress zones. This information comes to us from a wonderful researcher at Stanford, Firdaus Debar, and he talks about the high points and the low points, and that's what you want your day to be. You want to be very conscious about making sure that your day looks like that.
Now, by the way, is it a good idea to keep a journal every day of what you're thinking and what you're doing, because it helps you become more aware of our thoughts and behaviors that can trick you, that really can trigger some of these unwanted emotions that we can feel?
That is absolutely correct. And so gratitude journals have shown, research shows that gratitude journals and really reflecting on your day and figuring out what the high points were are very protective, very, very good for you. But there's something else that you just touched on, and that is the idea of actually writing about adverse experiences. There's a researcher at University of Texas in Austin. His name is James Pennebaker. And he has shown that self-reflective writing, when we're going through difficulties and trying to put our experiences into a framework, limiting their meaning when we need to, kind of looking to the future, seeing how it could turn out, what are the possibilities, have incredibly positive impacts, both physically and psychologically, on people. And so it's not necessarily, the evidence doesn't point to necessarily keeping a journal over the long term, although gratitude journals are incredibly wonderful to have and use as a method. But in particular, when we're going through adversities, if we're able to take some time and write about our experiences, that exercise has a profound impact on people in a very, very positive way.
Great advice. And you know, for me, Amanda, the most eye-opening revelation you have in your book is that, you know, stress is as old as life, but our present concept of stress was born during the 1950s and 60s when coronary disease had a dramatic increase and the first study linking smoking to heart disease had come out. And what really, really makes me shake my head was, what was the tobacco industry's utterly immoral response to this first study?
Isn't that, that was something that I discovered I had not known before I started writing about it, and it really blew my mind. And the reason why we know about what happened in the 1950s with the tobacco industry and their support of certain kinds of research, including stress research, and using that research and manipulating it for their own uses, is that in the 1990s, a treasure trove of documents was released as part of a settlement with the tobacco companies. And researchers began to sift through the data and look through these memoranda, millions of documents, in order to see what had been happening in the tobacco industry. And what they discovered is that very strategic point when they were faced with lawsuits because of rising public health crises, tobacco industry lawyers had gone out and they had spent money hiring different kinds of researchers, and they had asked the researchers to frame our stories, our public stories, our narratives in a very particular way. And what happened is that up until the 1950s, we had a pretty healthy attitude towards stress for the most part. we believed that, again, that which does not kill you makes you stronger, that you go through things, you go through adversities, you learn from them, you either come out or you don't. But around the 1950s, we started sort of feeling like we were overwhelmed by everything. There was this narrative that we were now overwhelmed by modern life, that it was more than we could handle, that everything was sort of the boogeyman. And this is when stress became the threat. And the problem with stress as a constant threat is that your body reacts to your perceptions of threat just in this, exactly in the same way as it does to an actual threat. And so you then are walking around through your days experiencing everything as a threat, and your stress response is then impacting you. And what does that create? It creates creates chronic stress. Because if you're always feeling like you're under threat, then you're chronically stressed. And so it is just absolutely the unhealthiest way to relate to stress, of feeling like you're always overwhelmed, which, of course, most of us do.
That's Amanda Anaiety in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Seeking Serenity, The 10 New Rules for Health and Happiness in the Age of Anxiety, published by NAL. And if you want more information, go to AmandaAnaiety.com. That's E-N-A-Y-A-T-I.com. AmandaAnaiety.com. I'm Michael Harrison. Carol Marks returns with more conversation when A Touch of Gray continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Rupert French. He's a career development specialist and author of the book titled How to Get a Good Job After 50, published by Exile Publishing.
Have you had the personal experience of looking for a job after 50, and how did it go?
Well, the answer is yes, and it was pretty disastrous. I had just been made redundant from teaching. I was 52, and I'd been working with labour market programs on a voluntary basis for roughly 10 years, and I thought I'd have no problem at all, and I was wrong. So I did a postgraduate diploma in business and then set myself up to help others find jobs and plan careers. And I might say it was a vertical learning curve. I knew I didn't know enough when I started, but I knew that the need was huge, and I was the best person around because I was the only one. So we got underway that way, and it's amazing how quickly the first skills came in.
What were the first skills, and how did that help
first
you?
First skills for the first tips, if you like, for job search, for being successful. I could see where I'd gone wrong when I'd been made redundant, and I'd been job searching. And I sort of thought, blimey, how can I be so stupid?
What did you change that was stupid?
Everything has changed now. I get people, my clients, to consider themselves to be self-employed, not unemployed. The CEO of myself, Inc., and then to go out as a sales rep looking for prospective clients, in this case, of course, employers. And that sort of develops a proactive approach as well. They feel a lot better about themselves being self-employed rather than unemployed, and it works.
And as you say, you've got to have that positive can-do attitude. Now, one thing that you mentioned in your book was to only focus on two jobs at any one time. What makes you say that the more applications you send off, the less likely you are to get a job?
That's exactly right. Although it seems to be counter to popular wisdom, it's really common sense, because the person who wins the job it's usually the applicant who puts in the best overall application. That means the resume, the interview, the research into the organisation and the position, and the networking. And someone who's concentrating on just two jobs can put a lot of time and effort into each application and do a much better job than someone who's trying to apply for 20.
Makes sense. And, you know, I want to ask you this because I think that a lot of job seekers over 50 feel that most employers don't want to hire older workers, and that would impact having a positive attitude about going for a job. So is this a myth, and what has recent research said about this?
There was a survey done by Adecco of 1,500 hiring managers, and they found that 60% of those people would prefer to hire someone over 50 than someone under 35. So while there is undoubtedly some age discrimination going on, the biggest barrier is probably in the mind of the job seeker rather than in the mind of the employer. That doesn't mean to say that it's not there. It's still very important. And it's one of the things that I try and explain how to get round, how to beat that that concept of being discriminated against in your own mind. That's one of the things that is important in the book, because if you don't have it, you're not going to be successful.
And certainly a very important part of getting a job is your resume. And you call it a marketing tool. What in the world, because I think everybody wonders about writing a resume, what is the prospective employer looking for? What should you put down there?
More than anything else, I think they're looking for motivation in that resume, the motivation for that specific job. That numerous surveys have been done that show that an employer spends on average about 8 seconds to decide whether an application is worth further consideration.
That's
or goes straight into the reject pile. And in 8 seconds, they can read about halfway down page one. So if you're not talking about your motivation for that specific job in the top half of page one, well, you may have missed the boat.
And how far should you go back with your employment record on your resume? And what about your age? Where should you put that on your resume?
Right. Well, taking those two things separately.
Okay.
First, you put in the resume things that are that will help the employer envisage you in the job. So it may be you go back about 10 years in your career history, but it may be that you want to go back further because there's something further back that is really relevant to this position. But it may be that you don't need to go back that far. It's how useful is it to help them envisage you in the position? And age, I suggest putting the date of birth well down on page two or page three of the resume, because by that time the employer is convinced that you'd be right for the job and now wants to start envisaging you in the job. And if you put down your date of birth, then that gives him or her the right idea, and they can envisage you more easily in it. If you don't put it down and you surprise them at the interview by looking a lot older or than they expected, then you're probably going to lose out there. So it's better to let them know first. That's what my experience has been, that I've found that is normally helpful.
Now, here's another question that I think is important. I've always wondered about it. Should you soften your job titles on your resume so you won't seem overqualified? Because oftentimes we're told that we're overqualified for a job that we want to have.
Well, again, if you've got a qualification that is not relevant to the job, you don't need to put it in.
True.
The resume doesn't have to have everything. It's not the curriculum vitae. It's not the running of your life. It doesn't have to have everything in it. All it has in it is brief details of why you're right for that specific job. So anything that's not relevant, including extra qualifications, unnecessary qualifications, leave them out.
Very good. And then there's, of course, that important cover letter. And should you emphasize your accomplishments and achievements and also talk about your computer and other technical skills that you have?
Now, there are different sorts of cover letter. There are cover letters that seem to be sort of something like a what we call in Australia a statement addressing the selection criteria, which show how you meet each of the specific qualities or qualifications that the employer is looking for. And in that sort of letter, then yes, obviously you've got to show how you meet each of those, and you do so by talking about specific achievements that you've got. Most people over 50 are nowadays very computer savvy, and I've got a quote in there from an American IT academic and entrepreneur who said that he hired programmers who were over 50, and he said they were the best people who stuck with him, the steadiest workers that he had. So that was a plus.
Yes, I love to hear that. I certainly
yes.
do.
But if you haven't got computer skills and you need them, then the answer is to go and get them.
That's career development specialist Rupert French in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled How to Get a Good Job After 50. It's published by Exile Publishing. If you'd like more information, the website is Get a Good Job After 50, and 50 is 50. That's getagoodjobafter50.com. More Touch of Gray coming your way when we continue in just a moment. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a round table of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. And so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation, meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. And in many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also, there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgrey.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgrey.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgrey.com. We spell gray with an E.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. It is important to address a personal emergency response system in your home in case of falls or injuries. AARP encourages their use for many older Americans to enhance independence and security, especially for those living alone. Many brands of PERS are available on the market, and seniors should consider their specific needs and budget before deciding on a system. The Federal Trade Commission provides free online information. One can get a system as basic as wearing a necklace or bracelet and push a button that will transmit to an installed response center through your landline telephone. In the event of an emergency with falls, chest pain, a suspected intruder, a press of the button will have a 911 ambulance dispatched to your home, even if you cannot reach your phone. PERS systems can be rented or purchased through local hospitals and are affordable and serviced by representatives. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And we've come to that point in the program where we're joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, and we talk a bit about the media and talk radio. In addition to being a senior correspondent on A Touch of Gray, Kevin Casey is also the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, the trade publication in the talk radio business. Kevin, what kind of a week has this been in the world of talk media?
Well, it's always a busy week in the world of talk media, but it's been a particularly weak because of the violent and incendiary protests that have been taking place in Baltimore over the course of the week as a result of the death of Freddie Gray in police custody about 14 days ago.
That certainly has had an impact on our industry. I know one of the big stations in Baltimore, WBAL, has shifted its programming around. What's the story there?
Yeah, they've been covering it pretty much 24/7 because it's clearly right in their backyard. They happen to be a station owned by Hearst, and they have a partner in WBAL-TV, so they've had access to a lot of news reporting that they've been able to share that comes from the TV side as well. But regardless, it's been 24/7 watch as citizens have been concerned about safety, certain parts of town not safe to go to, et cetera, and a big issue for that region.
This seems to be a rolling story that goes from one city to another to another. This has been going on now, this wave of police-related protest violence and racial strife. This has been going on now for quite a while. The Ferguson situation seems like the beginning of a whole trail of these.
Sure. And, you know, and it's technology that's bringing this to the light. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I have facts and figures about cases of police, you know, injuring or killing people in custody or shooting unarmed people. I don't have that data. But my guess is that it's happened, you know, all along throughout history. We're seeing it now because of the preponderance of cameras, microphones, cameras and phones, and people are able to tape this stuff, and it's getting out there when it happens. And, of course, whether or not the police are guilty of a crime at the time or not, as you well know, video, and then it gets passed around, and tensions start to boil, and, you know, pretty soon you have what we have in Baltimore.
And then you have the political football aspect of it.
Sure.
You have situations where there are good and bad in every group. There are good cops, bad cops. There are good whites, bad whites. Good blacks, bad blacks. Good Jews, bad Jews. Good, you know, Muslims, bad Muslims. I mean, let's face it, humanity is a patchwork of all kinds of types and a spectrum of people. And if you look at reality for what it is, that being said, when you have one of these unfortunate situations, those who like to politicize it, to use it to make their case, they come out of the woodwork, and therefore it's, you know, crazy people who don't appreciate police. The police should be supported, or all police are, you know, fascists and out to get us. So you have that crowd, and then you have the thugs, the gangs, the looters,
sure,
who use anything as an opportunity to break a few windows and steal some stuff. So the media, which is your interest and my interest in terms of our expertise, the media seems to be this unregulatable, and it shouldn't be regulated, but it's just this amplifier that just amplifies everything without any kind of rhyme or reason, and makes a bad situation worse or brings to light things that people should know about.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, media, you know, the way journalists were trained was to put things into context, tell the whole story, the backstory, provide your video, your audio, whatever. And clearly just a, you know, 60 seconds of an incident on tape doesn't necessarily do that. Now, is it showing you the truth? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, also the 24-hour news cycle and the rush to be first, and we'll figure out who's correct later, also plays into it. Kevin Casey, thanks for sharing your expertise and insights with us. Kevin Casey is the Vice President and Executive Editor of the trade publication Talkers at talkers.com. If you'd like to visit it, it's there for the public, although it is a trade publication. And he's also a senior correspondent here on A Touch of Gray. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray will continue in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. New guidelines from the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for persons 65 and older reveal that if women drink more than 7 drinks per week or greater than 3 drinks per occasion, and men 14 drinks per week or greater than 4 drinks per occasion, you're at risk for illness or injury. As the body ages, the tolerance to alcoholic beverages decreases. Literally, at 65 and older, you're unable to process alcoholic beverages, as say a person that is 45. Alcoholic overuse and intolerance can worsen mental confusion, problems with balance and falls, depressive disorders, dehydration, inadequate nutrition, adverse interaction with some medications, medications and can lead to social isolation. One drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of liquor, or the amount in a shot glass. Are you ready to acknowledge that at age 65 and older, that fewer than 7 drinks per week or one drink per day is the limit and offers you the advantages of leading a healthier and safer lifestyle? I'm Suzanne Hannes. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back, loss of hair, lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite, he would go back to his hair loss.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite.
When I get to about 3/4.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order. Dynavite.com.
Each and every day, she is getting that Dynavite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation now with Larry Kotlikoff. He's a professor of economics at Boston University and president of Economic Security Planning Incorporated. He's going to talk to Steve about his new book titled Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security, published by Simon & Schuster.
Larry, you had 3 general rules, and one of them was be patient. Wait to collect as long as possible. Now, I know in recent years, more and more people are collecting early at 62, but that's not a good idea, is it?
Well, I mean, it is a good idea. It is a good idea to wait in most cases, but I don't want to say anything categorical here because everything about Social is very specific to the particular household in question.
Sure.
But in general, the huge advantage to waiting because you're going to get a much higher benefit for the rest of your life. For example, if you wait till 70 to collect your retirement benefit, it's going to be 76% higher than if you take it at 62 for inflation. So over and above the inflation adjustment, it's going to be 76% higher. So imagine getting that from age 70 through age 100, a 76% higher benefit. So in general, we want to that's rule one, which is to be patient. Rule two is to make sure that you understand all the benefits that are available to you. So there's more than just your own retirement benefit. There's spousal benefit. There's widower benefits. There's child benefits. If you're divorced, you can get divorcee spousal benefits and divorcee widow benefits. So you have to be aware of these benefits. And rule three is to time your benefit collection so that if you take 2 benefits at once, like a widow's benefit and a retirement benefit at the same time, they'll just give you the larger of the two. So you'll wipe out these 2 benefits. But if you time things correctly, you can get one of the benefits early and then let the other one grow and start the other one at some point in the future. So, for example, if you're a widow, you might want to take a widow's benefit at 60 and your own retirement benefit at 70. But it could also be better to take your own retirement benefit at 62 and you're at full retirement age, which is currently 66. So exactly what you do depends on your own earnings history and if you're and your spouse's or your ex-spouse's earnings history. So the book goes through all these things. It also talks about how to think about Social Security in terms of its insurance properties. It's providing insurance against living to a very old age. So it's a special program. It's not to be considered an investment. It's not like investing in the stock market. You can't really think about this on a break-even basis. We don't think about buying homeowners insurance on a break-even basis. So this is by being patient, giving up some benefits for a while to get something much higher. It's really like buying extra insurance against outliving your money. And that's really important way. So we're trying to get across how to think about Social Security and how to value it, as well as how to optimize.
One of the things which comes out in this, and like you said, there are certain rules, but they're very, very fact-specific to your own particular situation. And there's a refrain that I often hear with Social Security planning, which takes me back to school, which I never liked. This was math class, and it's do the math. Are there easy places where we can go and plug in figures and do the math to see what's going to be the better ways for us to choose and in regard to Social Security benefits?
Well, the book itself is kind of doing the math for people. It's trying to lay out, and for many people, the book is really going to be all they need. They're going to be able to see exactly what's the optimal strategy. They may not know exactly the dollar amount, but they'll be able to get a pretty clear handle. Then, as we mentioned in the book, I do have, through my company, a software program for $40 that people can use to see exactly what to do, and it's called Maximize My Social Security, and it's at maximizemysocialsecurity.com. It's a program for people to plug in their earnings histories and get a strategy back. But I think for the cost of the book and for the cost of the software, these two things together can really help people get a very clear picture of what precisely will maximize their life and benefits.
That's super. Now, you know, there are a lot of things that people don't even understand about this. And one of the things you mentioned about getting a benefit as someone who is divorced, and in fact, you can have multiple people getting benefits, former spouses, and it doesn't get decreased according to the number of spouses, does it?
No, if you've been married, let's say four times for 10 years each, at least, you can collect benefits off of four different spouses. You can start with your spouse has to be at least 62 for you to get a spousal benefit. But, you can start collecting on one spouse, flip over to another spouse with no penalty. You know, if you got a third spouse who passes away, you can start collecting a widower benefit on that. So we have in the book a discussion of a hypothetical guy named William Gigolo, who is making an entire lifetime living out of women and living off of their Social Security records, earnings records, and flipping from one to the next.
Now,
that's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, funny story, but it's absolutely the case. There's nothing illegal about it.
No, it's very interesting, and people generally don't know it. There was a law passed with an interesting title, the Senior Citizens Freedom to Work Act, although I often thought it should be called the Do You Want Fries with That Act. And there are different tax aspects of people earning money while you don't have to be retired to get Social Security benefits. So it does make a difference as far as the taxability, however, whether you are of full age or not. Is that right?
The taxability of Social Security benefits? Well,
yes.
I'm not sure I'm getting the question exactly right. It's are you asking whether it kicks in at a certain age?
Well, talking about when people are working, the taxability of your benefits is dependent.
Oh, the earnings test. Yeah, the earnings test we discuss in the book as well. If you're under full retirement age, there is an earnings test, and you can lose 50 cents on the dollar of your benefits. That's one of the gotchas that Social Security has. On the other hand, as we discuss in the book, once you have full retirement age, Social Security makes it to your benefits. But a lot of people thought there's an earnings test. That's not going to work well for us. But then other people said, well, there's an earnings test, but it's made up for by Social Security raising your benefit at full retirement age. But then there's a third thing that we point out in the book, which is that if you flip from one benefit to another at full retirement age or thereafter, the earnings test doesn't really make up fully for what you've lost. So this all has to be factored into your optimal strategy. And that's done, discussed in the book, and also you can, the software incorporates aspects as well.
That's Larry Kotlikoff in conversation with Steve Wiseman. His book is titled Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Go to MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com for more information. Steve Wiseman returns on A Touch of Gray in just a moment.
Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with four legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. Our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed them very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
We tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well, and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair, and we're joined again the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is an attorney, he's a prolific writer, and he's one of the world's leading experts on scams. And that's a big topic because there are a lot of scams out there. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And with Prentice Hall, he's just released a new book titled Identity Theft Alert. He has a website, and I strongly advise you visit it. It's got very, very valuable information on it. It's called scamicide.com. Here now, Steve is going to talk about the dangers of using public Wi-Fi because of all them hackers out there. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. The great Groucho Marx once remarked that a four-year-old child could understand a report that he started to look at, but as he read further and found he couldn't understand it, he said, "Run out and find me a four-year-old child." Well, Betsy Davis isn't four. She's seven. But it's still pretty impressive that a computer-savvy seven-year-old could find the instructional information she needed to hack into a Wi-Fi system, a public Wi-Fi system, and then hack into a public Wi-Fi system, all in a mere 10 minutes and 54 seconds. So let's get this straight. They give her the task. She then Googles on her laptop. She gets the information, assimilates the information, and is able to hack into the people using this Wi-Fi system around her, all in 10 minutes and 54 seconds. Fortunately, Betsy's not a criminal hacker. In this, she was enlisted as part of a security experiment to show how easy it is to hack into a public Wi-Fi network and steal information from people using that network. And all of it begs a question. How safe are you when you use public Wi-Fi? And the bad news is, most people aren't pretty safe. The good news is, by following a few precautions, you can enhance your safety significantly. So where are we using public Wi-Fi? Well, you'll certainly see it people in coffee shops, people in malls, in airports, in hotels. It's everywhere. Whatever electronic device you're using to connect to a Wi-Fi network, whether it's a computer, a laptop, a tablet, or a smartphone, it should be equipped with security software, anti-malware software, antivirus software. In addition, you should have encryption software so your communications are encoded. Also, go to your settings and turn off sharing. It's an easy thing to do. Finally, you should make sure your firewall is current and turned on. And you may want to consider using a virtual private network. Now, this is something which you can get free that will enable you to send your communications through a separate and secure private network while you're still on that public Wi-Fi. A good one that I've used is CyberGhost. Great name. And you can get that by going to CyberGhost's website. You can find that by Googling it. But the bottom line is, when it comes to public Wi-Fi, you should be very, very careful. Don't assume that it is secure. You can't even assume that it's the real deal, because sometimes there are even identity thieves who set up competing Wi-Fis right next to the real ones. So take some precautions, and you can use it safely.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman joins us every week here on A Touch of Gray. He's a senior correspondent on the show. He's also a prolific writer, a lawyer, and an expert on scams and fraud, as well as many of the topics we talk about. He's written Identity Theft Alert and The Truth About Avoiding Scams, both published by Prentice Hall, and his website. Check it out. It's very, very valuable. It's scamicide.com. Steve Wiseman. I'm Michael Harrison, and I want to thank Beverly Santinello on the front line, our producer, putting it all together, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine for sharing some insights about the media, and of course, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and a champion in the battle against ageism. And remember, no matter how many years you have, you know, on your odometer, no matter how many times you've taken that voyage around the sun, it's never too late to follow your dreams, to follow your passions, and to really enjoy your life to its fullest. Never too late at all. So get cracking at it. I'm Michael Harrison. Thank you for joining us. Join us again next weekend right here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.